Here's what I keep getting stuck on. The light show and the strike use the same propellers. Like, not metaphorically, the same ones.
Yeah, that's it, isn't it? What it really means that Wonder and surveillance share infrastructure, and whether knowing that changes what you felt before you knew it. This whole issue of The Intersect, issue number 77, called The Same Sky, Two Feelings, is really built around that tension.
It certainly is. We're going to get into some incredible aerial photography competitions, a world record with over 22,000 drones, a swarm performance at LACMA.
We've also got a Skeletor drone show that's literally trolling highway traffic, an art installation all about surveillance, and underpinning it all, a look at how the internet itself followed that exact same arc, from feeling like pure wonder to being weaponized. This is the Intersect of Art and Tech podcast, covering issue number 77 of the Intersect newsletter. DJI just gave out almost $200,000 in prizes for aerial photography, 53 different award categories, the 11th annual DJI SkyPixel competition. It ran from November 2025 to March 2026. Almost $200,000. That's a serious amount of money for photos from the sky. It really is. The SkyPixel competition is DJI's annual contest for drone-captured imagery, and it's in its 11th year. What's amazing are the winning shots. They really show off that unique bird's-eye perspective you just couldn't get before consumer drones. Think about it, looking straight down at patterns in landscapes, valleys filled with fog, winding coastlines, wild geological formations. Those kinds of images just completely shift your sense of scale.
It's true. They make the world look alien sometimes. You see the planet in a whole new way.
Absolutely. And Jürgen, our curator, actually came to drone photography from an even earlier, much more hands-on route, kite aerial photography. Before commercial drones were even a thing, he was building self-leveling platforms that hung under kites, rigging up remote-controlled cameras, even hacking together a live video transmission system using a handheld TV so he could see what the camera saw from the ground.
That sounds like a lot of work, like a real passion project.
Oh, definitely. He'd be walking beaches and lighthouses with this homemade rig. And then commercial drones arrived, and all that manual effort, all that craft, became obsolete almost overnight. He's lived through that pattern multiple times, actually. Darkroom photography replaced by Photoshop, 8x10 view cameras replaced by digital, then kite photography replaced by drones, and now, arguably, drone photography itself is challenged by AI-generated imagery that can render a believable aerial shot from just a text description.
Yeah, that's got to be a weird feeling. Like you master this intricate craft, pour all this effort into it, and then suddenly a machine can do it in seconds. It's a bittersweet kind of progress. New possibilities open up, but something is lost, you know? That tangible skill. Exactly. That's the bittersweet quality he talks about. But the key thing Jürgen
lands on is that what made drone photography special to him wasn't the technology itself. It was the perspective, that bird's eye view, seeing the world from above, which earthbound photographers couldn't access. And competitions like SkyPixel, at their best, they still celebrate that shift in perspective, that way of seeing, rather than just the hardware.
So it's
about the vision, not just the tool.
Right. But he also flags a tension here. He says his taste for drone spectacle has really been soured by the Ukraine war, by the knowledge that autonomous drone swarms coordinating in the sky are now as much a military reality as an artistic one. An image like a SkyPixel winner, though, a single drone capturing a single stunning perspective, still connects to that original, almost innocent joy of just seeing the world from above.
That pattern he's describing, the thing that starts out feeling like pure possibility and then gets complicated, that's actually the whole arc of the internet, too. Before we get into that next story, I just wanted to quickly mention something about The Intersect itself.
Oh, yeah, because this issue, The Same Sky, Two Feelings, it really is a perfect example of what the newsletter does. It's not just like a list of cool links.
No, it's not. It really threads them together so you start to see a bigger pattern, you know? Like how all these seemingly disparate things are actually connected.
Exactly. If you're someone who thinks about how technology changes creative work, and not just AI, but fabrication, sound, installation, photography, all of it, the newsletter is genuinely worth subscribing to.
It's free, it's weekly, and you can find it at theintersect.art.
Okay, so the internet.
Okay, so the internet. This one hit me in a different way because it's not about drones at all. It's about the web. But it's telling the same story, you know?
It really is. The whole arc is just wild to consider. This piece in The Intersect breaks down the World Wide Web's trajectory into four distinct phases, and it makes you think about how quickly things shifted.
Yeah, like I remember the early days. It felt like anything was possible.
Exactly. The 90s were all about democratizing the world. Open access, decentralized power, everyone getting a voice. And then the 2000s, it just became omnipresent, completely woven into our daily lives. That was still a time of a lot of optimism. But then it changed again. It did. After 2010, the web started to become a tool for the re-centralization of power. A few massive platforms began controlling what billions of people saw and did. And now, the latest phase, it's primarily serving as a playground and database for chatbots and agents. The trajectory is undeniably clear, from liberation to lock-in.
Lock-in, that's a good way to put it. It feels like we're seeing that pattern everywhere now.
We really are. And Jurgen, the curator, specifically brings up Cory Doctorow's concept of enshittification here. It's this idea that online services intentionally degrade over time to maximize profit.
Oh, I know what you mean. Things start great, then they get worse.
Right. They offer a ton for free. The experience is genuinely delightful. Users get hooked and feel totally locked in. And then the monetization kicks in. Ads, data extraction, and the user experience just slowly degrades. Jurgen says he's even seeing this play out in real time with AI coding tools. Services that were excellent 6 months ago are already showing signs of this degradation.
That's kind of depressing to think about. It's not just the web, then. It really is like the story of how so much technology moves from feeling like pure wonder to pure extraction.
It is. It maps directly onto the drone arc we were just talking about. The same hardware that made aerial photography magical is now coordinating battlefield strikes. The infrastructure might be the same, but the intent shifted dramatically.
So it's the same sky, two feelings for the internet too?
Absolutely. The web's infrastructure is largely the same, but the purpose, the users, the power dynamics, they all changed. It's the same sky, but with a completely different feeling underneath it.
And speaking of scale, the drone numbers are getting wild.
So we were just talking about the arc from wonder to worry, and then you get a headline like this, 22,582 drones in the air at the same time from a single computer.
Wait, that's a truly astounding number. Over 22,000 drones all coordinated by one system? What even does that look like?
It looks spectacular, frankly. This was a new Guinness World Record set in February 2026 for the most multi-rotor drones airborne simultaneously from a single computer. Imagine massive, glittering formations across the sky, creating shapes and patterns that were completely out of reach even 5 years ago. It's a huge technical achievement, getting all those individual units to move as one.
And it's one computer doing all that. That's a mind-bending level of control. It makes me think about Jurgen and his own history with drones. He was a commercial drone operator, right?
He was, yeah. He's federally licensed. He got into it because of his photography background, really. He started even earlier than commercial drones, actually, building his own self-leveling platforms that hung under kites, rigging up remote-controlled cameras. He was walking beaches and lighthouses with this homemade kite setup just to get that aerial perspective.
So he was literally building the tech to get the view before drones made it easy. That's dedication to the craft.
Absolutely. And then commercial drones arrived in the mid-2010s, and he transitioned to those. He He'd strap his drone case onto the back of his motorbike and ride all around northern New Jersey and the Jersey Shore just looking for aerial photography opportunities. Those felt completely innocent at the time.
But his perspective on them, I remember him saying it's been permanently altered, that it's not the same kind of wonder anymore.
No, it's not. He talks about how the role of autonomous drone swarms in the Ukraine war has really shifted how he sees them. He told us he now looks at these huge drone swarms, even something like this world record, more as an ominous sign of the future than just a spectacular, modernized version of fireworks.
It's hard not to feel that, isn't it? Because on one hand, 22,000 drones moving as one is genuinely awe-inspiring as a technical and visual achievement. It's like magic.
It really is, but the same coordination capability, one system controlling thousands of autonomous units, that's exactly what makes military drone swarms so effective and, frankly, so frightening. The wonder and the threat really are inseparable here. You can't celebrate that incredible coordination without acknowledging what else that coordination enables.
There's an art piece that actually tries to hold both of those feelings at once. Have you seen Drift's work before? The studio, they did this piece called Franchise Freedom for the opening of the new LACMA galleries.
Oh yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's truly something. They use swarm-based drone choreography. You know, those drones moving together in these incredibly organic, fluid patterns. It's like watching a murmuration of starlings, but with light. It was performed for the opening of LACMA's new galleries, and the visual effect, with the drones glowing and moving as a collective, it really does evoke that beautiful, unpredictable coordination you see in bird flocks. It's one of the more poetic uses of drone swarm technology out there.
I remember reading Jürgen's notes on that, and he has such a conflicted feeling about it. He mentioned how genuinely wonderful those early choreographed drone swarms felt. But that response, he said, has been totally altered by what's happening in Ukraine, this prospect of autonomous killing machines built on drone tech.
Right, and the comparison he draws is really thought-provoking. Fireworks. We just delight in fireworks, don't we? But they have military origins. Gunpowder, explosives, the same chemistry that powers weapons. His question is, have we just made peace with that?
Yeah, like, is the drone-to-weapon pipeline the same kind of thing? Will we eventually just stop noticing the military shadow behind these spectacular displays? Or is it different because the autonomy part, the AI coordination, makes it qualitatively scarier? I mean, with fireworks, it's still a human lighting a fuse.
That's where it gets complicated. Drift's piece itself is trying to reclaim that swarm idea, referencing nature, those starling murmurations, as if to pull it away from the military connotation and back to something organic and beautiful. But does that work? Does it feel genuinely hopeful, or is there a part of us that just can't unsee the other side of it now?
It's tough. You want to appreciate the art, but that context, it's always there, isn't it?
It really is. And then there's the version of drone art that's not trying to be poetic at all.
Picture this. You're stuck in traffic on a Southern California highway, and you look up, and there's Skeletor, made of drones, just hovering there, being snarky at you.
Right? It's absurd, but also kind of amazing. It's a Masters of the Universe drone show, and yeah, it was basically just Skeletor trolling gridlock drivers. Total pop culture spectacle. You know, the kind of thing that instantly goes viral.
It feels so playful, almost innocent. But Jürgen's take on this one was really sharp. He pointed out that even this light-hearted use can't totally escape the bigger context.
No, he's right. Because when you see something like that, a quirky, relatively small-scale promotional stunt, and then you compare it to the drone displays happening in China, the gap is just enormous. Those Chinese displays are operating at a completely different level of complexity, scale, and number of drones. This Skeletor show might be using, what, 2% of the drone count and design sophistication of comparable Chinese displays?
So it's not just an entertainment difference.
Exactly. And that gap isn't just an entertainment story. It has military implications. The same country leading in civilian drone swarm technology is also leading in military drone swarm capability. Jürgen was pretty clear about that. He actually really admires companies like Anthropic for resisting government requests to use their AI models for things like mass surveillance and autonomous military applications.
That's interesting, because you hear about other AI companies that, you know, started with this mission to benefit humanity, but then they've partnered with governments for surveillance and battlefield uses.
Yeah, and they often justify it by saying, well, it's legal. But as Jerkin points out, it's only legal because Congress hasn't caught up and regulated it yet, not because it's inherently ethical. It's a huge policy tension right now, trying to figure out who decides what AI gets used for when the tech is moving so much faster than the rules.
It really makes you think about that Skeletor show differently. There's something almost surreal about using this tech to troll commuters when the same underlying capability is reshaping global military strategy.
It really highlights the duality we're seeing. Okay, last one. And this one shifts the whole frame. So everything we've been talking about, drones, swarms, AI coordination, has been mostly visual. This last piece is about sound and surveillance.
Sound and surveillance? That's a different angle to take on all this.
What kind of piece is it?
It's called The Harbinger. It's an art piece that really digs into automated care and the surveillance state. It addresses this idea that there's a bearable level of surveillance, and then there's a level that just becomes unbearable. And that threshold has totally shifted over time. We just keep accommodating more and more of it.
It feels like artists have been grappling with this for a while, trying to materialize that constant monitoring to make it visible, or in this case, audible.
Exactly. And Jürgen makes a really interesting point here that most of the time when people discuss AI in art, they're talking about generative AI, things like image creation or text generation. But what enters the discussion less often is AI's massive role in the surveillance state.
Right, because AI is what makes so much of that monitoring possible now, at scale, without human eyes necessarily needing to be on every single feed.
Totally. And he calls out this tension between companies that resist government surveillance requests and those that don't. He really admires companies like Anthropic for resisting. He contrasts that with others like OpenAI, which started with a human benefit mission, but is partnered with the U.S. government for surveillance and battlefield applications, justifying it by saying those uses are currently legal.
But his point is they're only legal because Congress hasn't caught up with regulation, not because they're ethical. That's a huge distinction.
Precisely. So this piece, The Harbinger, using sound as its artistic medium for that commentary, he feels it's incredibly timely right now.
It really brings us back to the whole through line of this issue. We've been tracing a pattern here, haven't we? Technology that starts as wonder and then becomes something much more complicated. Drones went from aerial photography to military weapons. The internet went from democratization to this enshittification. And surveillance, it went from something we might have noticed and resisted to something we've just gradually normalized.
So The Harbinger is asking us, at what point did we stop noticing? What does it actually sound like when care and control essentially become the same thing?
It's like the issue's title, The Same Sky, Two Feelings. The sky is still the same. The technology is still the same. What's changed is us, really. What we know now, what we've seen. What we can't unknow anymore. It really does make you think about how things aren't ever just one thing, are they? Like all that wonder we felt, it's still there, but it's layered now with, well, with everything else.
Exactly. It's not about finding a neat answer or picking a side. It's about recognizing that the delight was real and the concern is real, and they both just coexist. These are the kinds of stories that, you know, they sit with you long after you've closed the tab.
If this conversation resonated with you, you can find the full newsletter with all the links, the incredible images, and Jürgen's insights over at theintersect.art.
That's issue number 77, The Same Sky, Two Feelings. Subscribe there to get it weekly. Thanks for listening to The Intersect of Art and Tech.